Good afternoon. It's our first Neil Huntington Show of 2019. Greg Brown with you. A cool afternoon here in Cincinnati, but no rain. In fact, the sun was shining most of this morning, and we expect a lot of sunshine today. Again, cool temperatures, but we will play ball here. It's going to turn out to be an abbreviated two-game opening series. The Pirates fell to the Reds 5-3 on opening day in what turned out to be a thriller. Beautiful 70-degree temperature at game time. Rained out yesterday. They'll make it up as part of a day-night doubleheader in late May. And we're joined in the booth by the Pirates general manager, Neil Huntington. Neil, what'd you think of opening day? All the festivities, historic here, the baseball's oldest professional franchise, 150th anniversary of Reds baseball. And, boy, a tense moment at the end in the top of the ninth inning. Corey Dickerson comes to the plate, a chance to tie it or maybe even take the lead with the bases loaded. Ends it up that 12-pitch at bat, grounds out to second base to end the ball game. But a pretty neat moment, and all in all, pretty good ball game.
Yeah, not the outcome we were looking for. Obviously, Corey had a terrific at bat there and battled and had a few pitches, and Hernandez just kept pounding the zone with mostly breaking balls, but also threw some fastballs there, and Corey just missed a few. But you really felt like he was going to tie that game or maybe even put us in the lead and just hit the ball a second to finish the game. But Jameson had pitched so well until coming out for the seventh with its 6 innings and 75 pitches. Makes all the sense in the world to run him back out there. One mistake to Peraza, and the next thing you know, 3 hitters reach, and Rodriguez, who'd been so good for us a year ago, threw a pitch in Dietrich's wheelhouse, and they made us pay. But overall, some really good signs from Jameson. Corey Dickerson, obviously, with the home run off their closer, overall, a decent played game. Some things that we can continue to grow upon, which we're going to do every single day. What a cool experience for opening day here in Cincinnati. I've heard so much about it over the years, and back in the day, the players were included in the parade the day before, and Cincinnati used to always have the first game. That's subsequently changed, but they had the parade, and I don't know if it was 100,000 people. I've heard estimates of 100,000 or 150,000 people lining the streets for their parade. Again, I think only one or two current players, starting pitchers, may have participated, but to see Johnny Bench and Joe Morgan and to see some great Reds from the past, but just the excitement and the enthusiasm around. They obviously are excited about the season. They're excited about their team, but the bigger picture, really cool to see opening day in Cincinnati all these years after hearing about it.
Neil, do you think that Clint Hurdle stayed with Jameson Taillon because he kind of wants to let him know that he is kind of confidence building, that, you're the ace, you're going to go out there for the seventh? Because you also wondered about it's early, you have the day off, it's his first start, even though the count was under 80. You have that lights out bullpen, maybe an opportunity to go 7-8-9 with Crick, Kella, and Vasquez. Again, maybe Hurdle goes in a different direction if it's not Taillon.
It's a great question, and that game is an interesting dichotomy because David Bell goes and gets Castillo, who had pitched really well against us after, 5 2/3. Their reliever comes in and immediately gives up their lead and puts us in the lead. Clint sticks with the starter at 6 innings and 75 pitches. And again, I think at Jameson Bennett 90 pitches, I think Clint makes a different move. But with Jameson pitching at 6 and 75, and we had not handled some plays defensively, so his pitch count should have been even lower than 75 going into that, coming out of that sixth inning. Jameson is one of our marquee guys, and at 75 pitches, it is a challenge to take out that starter at that point in time. I completely understand why David Bell did what he did, and it didn't work. I completely understand why Clint did what he did, and unfortunately, it didn't work. And that's the beautiful part about managing, is you get the first guess, everyone else gets the second.
Neil, tell us about your thinking regarding that right side defense. Is it something where you're kind of hoping for improvement from Frazier and Bell? And then the left side defense, going to be a lot better with Gong and Eric Gonzalez?
No doubt we need improved defense from Josh Bell to continue to be an option there for us at first base. The bat needs to play, and it's amazing how much more tolerant everybody is of defensive shortcomings when somebody's mashing and they're putting up big numbers. There are first basemen in the league that just won't make throws to second base, or they certainly aren't going to throw to third base on bad bunts. But they hit well enough, they don't get exposed or they don't get criticized. Then you have guys who can do both, who are good hitters and are good defensive players. And we need Josh to be a good hitter with power. We also need him to continue to catch the balls he's supposed to catch, makes the plays he's supposed to make. Adam Frazier, we do believe Adam is going to be a solid second baseman. Did have a tough opening day, obviously, but we believe he's going to be a solid second baseman, better on the pivot, better ranging left to right, better on the balls he's supposed to make the plays. And Gong and Gonzalez should be quality defensive players on the other side of the infield.
How much do you think Neil Bell's defense or concern about his defense plays in his hitting? And I wonder, would you ever consider saying to Bell, listen, just knock every ball down, pick up the ball, step on the bag, or underhand it to the pitcher? Do not worry about those throws. As you said, first basemen in the past have done that, just eaten the ball.
Yeah, he wants to be a complete player. I mean, he's driven to be a hitter with power. He's driven to be a guy that makes the plays he's supposed to, but then also can pick the ball up and make a nice 3-6-3 turn, or can get a guy trying to go on a bad bunt. I don't know that you ever want to take that away from a young player. If we get to a point in time and he's more than just in his third full season, maybe you get to that point in time with a Hall of Fame caliber offensive player that has significant issues with his arm, that you just say, okay, we're going to eat that as a part of the total package. But Josh is continuing to get better. It rears its head at times, and we're going to continue to work with him. I know Joey's continued to work with him, and he is better than he was 2 years ago, and there's still work to go.
Nick Birdie is on the club. Three batters faced in the eighth inning, three strikeouts. Was he on your club at the start of spring training? Did you know that, for the most part, he's a Rule 5 guy? You wanted to keep him anyway?
Ideally, yes, but he was going to have to earn his way onto the team, and he did in our minds. We love the power arm. We took him in the Rule 5 knowing that last year was going to be a year in which he spent most of the year on the disabled list, and it may carry into 2019, but we did so because of the mid to upper 90s fastball. We did because of the power slider. We did because this is a young man that's driven to be really good and has intangibles that goes along with it. But we also were very clear in the offseason, and we were very clear with Nick at the start of spring training, he had to make this club. This was not a scenario in which he was on this club because of the upside and because of the Rule 5 status. He had to go out and show that he can help this club win games, and will continue to need to do so, but had a really good spring and showed those weapons that led us to take him in the Rule 5 and take this opportunity to add a power arm, potential high leverage reliever to our club.
What do you think his role could be as early as this year?
You know, that's the beautiful part about this game is 50% of relievers that were good a year ago aren't going to be good this year. And so Nick Birdie has those abilities to pitch in higher leverage roles. Right now he has the ability to bridge. He could come into a game early to stem a tide until now you roll it over to Nick Kingham the next inning. He could also pitch him in the sixth and seventh if he continues to throw in the upper 90s with a power slider that he can throw behind in the count for strikes and can take off the plate for chase. That's the weapons that you can pitch in high leverage situations.
Our first Neil Huntington show of the year, coming your way from Cincinnati, Ohio, Pirates Reds today. Don't forget the home opener tomorrow, and that is a 1:05 start against the St. Louis Cardinals. Limited number of tickets available at pirates.com. We'll be back with more of the Neil Huntington show in a moment on the Pirates Baseball Network. We are back with Pirates General Manager Neil Huntington, our first show of the year. Pirates and Reds conclude what turns out to be an abbreviated two-game series to open the schedule with the home opener tomorrow at PNC Park. Neil, Lonnie Chisenhall, if he didn't have bad luck, I guess he'd have no luck. Everything going fine until that game in Houston, the exhibition game. He ends up breaking the tip of his finger. Tell us about Lonnie Chisenhall.
Yeah, unfortunately, Lonnie just caught a bad break, literally and figuratively. It had played fine in spring training, was looking forward to being our right fielder with Melky Cabrera coming off the bench behind him as a veteran switch hitter, and took that ball up and in, hit by pitch in his hand and broke the finger. We'll reevaluate him and sometime later this week. We want to get about a week to 10 days away from the actual hit by pitch, and we'll reevaluate him and see how it's healing and see what the next step is. And I know Lonnie wants to get back in this lineup as quickly as possible. We'd love to get him back in this lineup as quickly as possible, and we'll just have to see how the body responds.
It's possible, I guess, then, Neil, that a bit of irony that Gregory Polanco could return before Lonnie Chisenhall. How close do you think Polanco might be?
Well, Gregory continues to make great progress. He's feeling comfortable in the batter's box. He is playing games in right field and working to continue to build up arm strength in minor league camp. The next step, obviously, would be a rehabilitation. We want to be careful putting him in the cold weather too soon. Also, want to be careful of asking too much of him too quickly. And Gregory wants to get back out there, and he is driven to get back out and pick up where he left off last September and being a threat in the box and being a good all-around player. And we'd obviously love to get him back out there sooner than later, but we need to do it at the right pace, at the right time, and not put him in harm's way. The next step, again, is becoming active in terms of rehab, probably at Bradenton to begin his time, and again, how close we are every day we build and hopefully continue to build in positive directions.
How far do you think he can throw now without the issue?
Well, it's as much of it not being exposable by the other teams. I mean, Gregory Polanco's arm strength will be down most, if not this whole season. He is coming back from a fairly significant shoulder surgery. Most of the time, these shoulder surgeries take 9 to 12 months for pitchers to recover, and really no different than position players, although they don't have to build up to the pitch volume that relievers do or certainly starters do. So it's how much can he manage the throws, how does he respond to the warm-up, to the cool-down, and how does the shoulder respond to that as much as it is just being able to throw distance X.
Elias Diaz, he's going through his spring training, right?
He is, and that's our challenge with him. Is we talked about David Fries came in a handful of years ago, came into spring training late, and how many games did he need to get ready to go in a season? Well, David was coming in at full strength and full condition, maybe not baseball condition, versus Elias is coming back from the viral illness, which took some strength from him. So we're trying to build him up. But again, like Gregory, looking to get him continue to play in some minor league games, some simulated games in Bradenton. The next step becomes rehabilitation games. And again, we can send players out. Position players can go out for 20 days on a rehab assignment. Pitchers can go out for 30. So you want to start that clock at a point in time where you feel like they're going to be ready to go at the end of that 20-day window.
Neil, with Starling Marte being scratched opening day with the migraine and a little lower back issue late in spring training, is this something that you will continue just to monitor with him on both of those circumstances?
We will, and there's no significant concerns on either front. The migraine, he worked everything he could to try to get through that and to try to be able to play opening day, and I don't want to say debilitating, but it knocked him to a point where he could not go compete effectively and help this club win. And he's had a few of those over the years, and working with him to help him understand what he can control to avoid them. But unfortunately, they are a part of some people's lives, and those that have had them, I'm sure, will completely sympathize with Marte that's not a comfortable thing and not something you want to go try to compete at the highest level when your body's not able to do so.
In the meantime, J.B. Shuck started for him opening day and had three of his four plate appearances were solid, a line out to center field, couple of walks. Of course, we saw his outstanding defense. He's got major league experience. Oh, what happens, Neil, if Shuck, if Polanco comes back and you're at full strength? Is Shuck, does he have any options available?
He is out of options, and that's one of the challenges of putting a semi-veteran player on your club that is not optionable. Is at some point in time, and we're looking forward to having to make some tough roster decisions. We'll have to make some tough roster decisions as we get Polanco comes back, as Diaz comes back, and as we start to get back to full health, we'll have some interesting decisions to make, and we'll continue to explore other opportunities to add players to the organization, whether it's through small trades, larger trades, the waiver wire, things like that.
So that's why it's really tough for a general manager with a guy like Shuck, these guys who don't have options left at the start of the season, out of spring training, you can kind of hold on to them in the minor leagues, but then once they get up to the big leagues, there's no safety net.
Yeah, and that's it's an odd thing to say that a player has more value in AAA than he does for 5 days in your big league club where he may help you win a game or help you not lose a game. And that's that double-edged sword of that guy that's out of options. Sometimes you carry him a little bit longer because that becomes an irreversible decision potentially. That guy that's out of options could get claimed on waivers going out. A guy that's been outrighted once or multiple times before has the ability to choose to leave, and he can go to a different organization. So as you're putting your club together, not only out of spring training, but over the course of the year, you want to do your best to make sure you have the best 25, but also make sure you've got depth and opportunities to impact your club positively as you look at your AAA club.
And speaking of depth, Francisco Liriano also makes the club out of spring training. You signed him as a non-roster invitee, a minor league deal. He makes it. Steven Brault ends up on the club. Kevin Newman. What went into those three players in particular, Neil?
Yeah, Liriano, we had, with Tyler Lyon, Steve Brault, if he wasn't in the rotation, and Francisco Liriano, we were looking to provide multiple opportunities for left-handed relievers for Clint and Ray out of the bullpen. In Liriano's case, has done well against left-handers throughout the course of his career. Again, last year, has done better the shorter his outings are. More recently, again, an adequate starter for Detroit a year ago, and would ideally, and I think in his world, still like to start, but more than willing to accept a reliever role with us, and it may be one hitter in the seventh inning, or also maybe for two-plus innings to come in case of a starter not being able to get us length that day. Liriano has a unique ability of doing both of those things, and he also brings a quality veteran presence to a relatively inexperienced bullpen. They were very good last year, but they all are still relatively inexperienced, and Liriano brings a veteran presence to that. Steve Brault, with Jordan Lyles getting stretched out to 6-100 with us not needing our fifth starter until this coming week when we play five consecutive games or more. With Jordan getting stretched out, we had the opportunity to add another pitcher to the staff. When Jordan comes back, we'll have to make a decision of do we go back to 12 pitchers, 13 position players, or do we move to 13 pitchers and maybe send one of the position players out. Kevin Newman was on the club. It allows Clint the comfort of having a quality defensive option. Kevin's done a nice job against left-handed pitching and, again, showed us in spring training that he's the guy that we thought we were getting come last September that was 15 pounds lighter and just worn out physically. Kevin Newman is a lot closer to the guy we saw in spring training than the guy we saw last September, with opportunities to continue to get better. And it allows Clint the ability to use Pablo Reyes all over the field. He can fit him in as a defensive replacement, as a pinch hitter, as a pinch runner, and he can keep his versatility and add to the quality and the variability of our bench.
We'll have more with the Pirates general manager as the Pirates and Reds meet in Cincinnati, game two of the 2019 season. More to come on the Pirates Baseball Network. Welcome back to Cincinnati, Ohio. Pirates and Reds coming up this afternoon. Trevor Williams will make his 2019 season debut against Sonny Gray. And we'll have more of the Neil Huntington Show coming up. But first, we pause for station identification. Again, a reminder, limited number of seats available for tomorrow's home opener, 105 against the Cardinals at PNC Park. And some standing room only also available. Go to Pirates.com. This is the Pirates Baseball Network.
KDKAFM HD1 Pittsburgh, the flagship home for our Pittsburgh Pirates.
Well, Joe Musgrove was scheduled to start today, but with the rainout yesterday, Trevor Williams will go, and he was scheduled yesterday, as was Sonny Gray. Joe Musgrove now, Neil, will not pitch until, I believe, Friday. Any thought that maybe just push everybody back and let Musgrove pitch Wednesday instead of Jameson Taillon?
There were a number of conversations. The challenge we have with the multiple off days, Jameson Taillon is already going to be on his sixth day, which is one extra day, which isn't a bad thing. Pitchers tend to get out of routine if you start to ask them to pitch on their seventh day and two extra days or three extra days, which we're going to have some other sessions earlier in April or later in April where we have multiple off days that we'll have to juggle the rotation and mix and match as best we can. So the thought was, let's keep as many guys on turn as we possibly can. And there may come a point in time where we're able to get Joe against some hitters, whether it's in a simulated situation or something. But rather than drop everybody out of turn and impact the entire rotation, Joe was willing to be flexible and figure out some things kind of along the way.
Looks as though that then Jordan Lyles will make his Pirates debut Thursday, and that Musgrove then would pitch Friday against the Reds. So you also had that decision to make. Musgrove could have gone Thursday. That would buy you an extra day before you activated or added Lyles to the 25-man roster.
We did, and still working through exactly how the rest of this week, beyond today, beyond tomorrow, because of the off day on Tuesday, will play out. But Taillon will start on Wednesday, and then the rest of the rotation will fall in place depending upon how some things play out over the next two games.
What do you think of these off days and then rainouts? Does it create a bit of havoc early on? Because then I'll hear everybody complain I'll be one of them. Too many games in a row.
Yeah, our April schedule is really interesting in that we are three opening days. We're opening day in Cincinnati. We're opening day in Pittsburgh. We're opening day in Chicago. So we're the Cubs opening day. And after each of those opening days, there's an off day built in case you have rain on opening day, as we experienced in Detroit last year. Then you have, towards the end of April, we've got a two-game set against Detroit. So there's an off day before it and an off day after it. Then you've got some conventional off days, and you look up, and all of a sudden, I think we have seven off days between the couple of days we play in March and all of April. And then I think we have five off days in all of May and June combined. So we've got a ton of off days here in April, and it is tough because you're trying to get your pitchers just want to go face hitters. They want to go compete. They've built up in spring training, and they're ready to go. Your hitters, they're trying to get their timing down, and off days, multiple off days this early in the season can be a pain. At the same time, when you've got some guys with some aches and pains, they're missing fewer games. So there is a minor trade-off, but man, these guys are ready to go. They come out of spring training, they just want to play. They just want to go out and compete, and they want to win games.
So right now, there's no even thought about this opener idea. It seems like it's becoming in vogue now in baseball. More teams are jumping on that idea, and you had talked about it weeks ago as maybe a possibility, but right now, doesn't seem to be any need for it whatsoever.
No, and that's where Jordan Lyles is going to get the opportunity to go out and show that he can be a conventional starter, and if that's our best way to win the game when Jordan Lyles is pitching, in our minds, we'll continue to go down that pathway. If we get to a point in time where we feel we're better served to win a ball game consistently, to go to the opener, then we could go in that situation. We have a day-night doubleheader now that we'll make up on May 27th. Who knows where we decide to take the rotation at that point in time. But as we sit here, we like our rotation and want to attack this conventionally and a little bit more aggressive than conventionally. But the opener is here to stay, and it is going to be something that, you, in our minds, you can't build an entire rotation around it. But the concept is, how do you get the first six innings of the game most effectively and efficiently? And if that means you bring in a reliever who's really effective for an inning or an inning and a third or an inning and two thirds, and he gets the opposition's top of the lineup, and now your starter who's less effective gets the bottom of the lineup three times instead of the top of the lineup three times, that's the best way to carve up those six innings as you're trying to win a ball game. So when you have that, your best way to win a game, it makes sense to lean in that direction. We feel that we're as well equipped, if not better equipped, with the five starters that we are going to roll out there to start the season. And our plan is to have that continue, but if we need to make an adjustment, then we can.
Neil, also unconventional, what we saw, I believe, the last game in Sarasota when Chris Davis, the left-handed hitting first baseman for the Baltimore Orioles, came to the plate. The Pirates went with a four-man outfield. Adam Frazier, the second baseman, went out to play right center like a rover in softball. You going to pull that out during the season at some point?
Well, the idea behind shifts is to put players where the opposition hitter hits the ball the most. And if you can cover the infield with three infielders and he tends to hit an abnormally high amount of fly balls, but he covers the entire outfield, it makes a lot of sense to put an infielder capable of playing the outfield into the outfield, because you now put your defenders in a better position to catch the balls that are hit in play. And it is unconventional, but when you break it down to its most routine, most basic level, the defense is out there to catch the balls that are in play and to turn those into outs, so why wouldn't you put players in a position to catch the most balls possible?
So you think you might do it during the season?
We could.
At some
we
point.
Could, yeah.
We'll
it
just
it
have
takes,
to watch.
It takes a special hitter, a special scenario, special matchup, but it would not shock me to see us roll a four-man outfield out there at some point this year.
We've got more to come with the Pirates general manager, the Neil Huntington Show, and our final segment is next on the Pirates Baseball Network. And we welcome you back to the Neil Huntington Show, first one of 2019, and a lot of ground to cover. We didn't get to everything we wanted to. We will continue these conversations, I'm sure, next Sunday when the Pirates host these Reds, the final first homestand of the year. And Neil, I know we will revisit this in depth as we approach the end of July, but what do you think about the no more August deals, essentially, one trade deadline, end of July, July 31st? How will that impact the Pirates? Because you have made deals in August, late August, for that September run.
It will be interesting, because that basically means you have no access to players outside of your organization after July 31st. Now, what the August trade period had become was bad contracts and teams that were willing to take on bad contracts or had the resources, so it became big market favorable, could claim up that player on trade waivers and either just be given that player because the holding team wanted to just get rid of the contract, or they had the ability to take on a contract or partial contract of a player who had cleared waivers because nobody wanted to take on the bad contract. So what was happening is every player that was attainable for everybody was getting claimed. Nobody was getting through. It was players on bad contracts that were getting through waivers, and so it became very, very big market favorable. Yes, we approached it in 13, and we took on Morneau and Marlon Byrd at the end of August. Knowing that, maybe we would have operated a little bit differently on July 31st if we know that that's it. So it will be interesting. If you have no access to players after July 31st, you could see teams be more aggressive in June and early July than we typically do of waiting to July, and you may see even more activity on July 31st to players that are on bad contracts. The other challenge becomes it takes teams that are on the bubble, and it forces them to make a decision. Are we in or are we out on July 31st, whereas teams used to try to sneak through on and make a decision on August 15th if they were in or they're out. So there's a number of intended consequences, and there's going to be some unintended consequences that come out of it. But it should make July a much more active period this year.
Do you think that includes the Pirates, or might this hinder you from making moves?
Have you thought about it much? We've thought about it as we were going through the process of this being an option, an earlier trade deadline, a later trade deadline. The waiver period, the waiver trade deadline became something that I think most everybody wanted to get rid of because it was an exercise in futility, and you had to be prepared to take any claim that you were given because that team may just dump the contract. So you had to be prepared for that. And so it really wasn't a trade deadline as much as it was risk and risk assessment and did you want that player and what were your chances of getting the player and then watching a number of players not get to you anyway. So how it impacts us when we're buying, it puts more players on the table earlier, but it also may put, it's going to put clubs in a tough spot because you're going to have to make a decision on July 31st or July 20th, really, if you're going to truly engage in trade conversations. You need to give yourself a week to 10 days. So it may make it a more active period, or there may be more teams on the bubble. This National League this year is going to be a really interesting league. There's not a lot of teams that are out of it as we sit here today, whereas the American League has more teams that are technically out of it, although there's two or three teams that surprise good and bad every year in terms of competition level. So it will be. It should be an interesting trade deadline, but knowing that after July 31st you can no longer add realistically to your club, it should make for a more active July.
We have less than a minute left now on the show. That means when you talk about the more clubs in the National League are in it, you're including the Pirates. You still believe that this club has a chance to do some things this year?
We absolutely do. We recognize we're in a very tough division. We recognize that our big moves were made last July. We recognize that there's criticism. We didn't do anything to add to that this last offseason, but we like this young core, the rotation 1-4 especially. We believe Jordan Lyles can take a step forward. We like the back end of our bullpen. We like what we've added in terms of the middle options to be able to hold ties, to be able to hold deficits so our offense can chip back in. And we like our young position players and believe they're going to turn a corner and be a better offensive group overall. And we believe we take care of our business. We'll look up in September and October and be in a good spot. And we're hoping our fans will come out and support this group of players because they're good players and good men.
Starting with the opening game tomorrow. Neil, thanks so much. Look forward to talking to you next Sunday.
Thanks, Browning.
The Neil Huntington Show, we're underway. Bucks and Reds are next on the Pirates Baseball Network.